And in your tutorial, you had a task to calculate some basic Laplace transform just using the integral prescription. And so here are the results. I hope you have reached all of these. So I just want to mention how to calculate this one very, very nicely. And it's basically, it will be using the property which we derived yesterday. And it's how to actually differentiate these things and use this formula. So let me imagine that I take function f, which is sine a t square. Then I can differentiate it. So f prime is 2a sine a t cosine a t, which is a times sine 2a t. Okay, so now I can use this formula here. So you want to calculate the Fourier, the Laplace transform of f. So Laplace transform of f will be from that formula, it's of f prime plus f0 divided by s. So what is f at time equals 0? Sorry? It's 0. So if this is f, then this is 0. So this guy is 0. So the only thing I need is actually to calculate of f prime. But I know how to do that just looking here. So I know that sine 2at, so this is equal to a times, now I have, instead of a, I have 2a. So it's 2a divided by 4a squared plus a square divided by s. And so that's the Fourier, the Laplace transform of sine.
Why do you have a times 2a?
So a comes from here. And my new a is 2a, sorry, 2a and 4a squared. So this is equal to that. So you can use that formula to write this 1 over s 2a squared 4a squared plus a squared. So that's, and then of course cosine squared, I can just use 1 minus sine squared and so on. And then there was one more formula which was calculate e to a t times t equals to something, and we will get to that very quickly. Okay. What the hell is that? So, let me now return back to solving initial value problems, and I hope it will not happen many times. So equations with constant coefficients. Constant coefficients. And just as an example, so you have physical circuit, and you have some resistance R. And it's basically the same example as you saw yesterday in Dan's tutorial. And then you have some L, and then you have capacitors, capacitor C. And what stands here is it's U. And so this can, in general, depend on time. So you can have time-varying source. So then you have equation L di over dt plus R times I plus Q over C equals to U. And just remembering that I equals to dq over dt. So you have, and dividing by L so that I have nice form, you have q double dot plus r over L q dot plus 1 over LCQ equals to ut over L. So this is an example of equation with constant coefficients. So of course now you'll write it in mathematical language. So now we have y plus an arbitrary constant a y prime plus by equals to some function t And then you have some initial conditions, y at time equals 0 equals to y0, and y prime is y1. And so to solve this type of equation, it's very simple using the Laplace transform. So we'll be just using this property here. So if I do the Laplace transform here, I will have s square y minus s y at 0, which is y0, minus y prime, which is y1, plus a, okay, so this is ay. Minus a y0 plus b of y equals to f, hopefully. So from here, I can, it's just in the algebraic equation for y now, so I can express that. And so let me put everything on the right hand side now. So it's. Yes?
The a y term, so you have a s y.
Sure. Thank you. Okay, so we have f plus a y0, which is this term, the term. Then we have plus y1, which is this term, plus s y0, which is that term. And then we have to divide by s square, which is from that term, plus as. From that term and plus b, and this is equal to y. So we have solved for the Laplace picture of y. And so, of course, question is, can you find y? And so, in order to do that, you need an inverse of that. So to find y, you need an inverse. And there are various methods. So the basic method is method of partial fractions, if you have nice things. So for example, method of partial fractions, which you will practice in tutorial fractions, or complex method, which I will mention today, how to do it. So you need to find the inverse of that. So this was the equation with constant coefficients. Questions? So now, something a little bit more non-trivial is that you can also solve some equations with this variable coefficients. Variable coefficients, and in order to do that, you just consider an expression. So I take the Laplace transform and I take the derivative. Now it's with respect to s. So what is that by definition? It's integral from 0 to infinity d over ds. So everything which depends on s is just this exponential ft dt. And so, of course, this brings me down minus t. So this is integral 0 to infinity minus t ft e minus st dt. Again, of course, I assume everything works and everything, so that you can exchange that. So what does it mean? We have just derived the formula that f prime equals to minus t of f. And now you do the Laplace transform. So this can be generalized. We have f tn equals to minus 1 to n f. And now you do the derivative with respect to s. And there will be example in tutorials how you can actually solve some differential equation by using this formula which doesn't have constant coefficients. So you will just enjoy that. Questions? So of course now this is very helpful here in this example. So that you have precisely what you have on the right hand on the left hand side now. So this should be equal to minus and prime. So now we know that the Laplace transform is 1 over s minus a. So I just have to differentiate it with respect to s and take minus sign. So it should be something like 1 over s minus a squared, hopefully. So now something really nice is convolution. So Laplace transform does not really behave nicely if you have product of functions, but it behaves very nicely if you have so-called convolution. So first definition, if you have two functions f and g, then you define a new function f convolution with g, which is denoted by f star g, and it's function of t. And this is defined as an integral over the whole space, f t minus u, gu, du. So you see that I integrate out u, and what is left is t, so that's why it is function of t. So that's the general definition. So now, note. So in the context of Laplace transform, so if you have that prescription of the integral, then as I told you already yesterday, you are just interested in f for t from 0 to infinity. So you don't care what's happening for t smaller than 0. So basically, you ask in the context of Lorentz of Laplace transform that t is or the definition region of the function is bigger than 0. So in the context of Laplace transform, fg are defined on 0 and infinity and extended to minus infinity 0 by 0. So hence, what we require is basically that t minus u is bigger than 0 or equal, which means u is smaller than t, and also that u is small, and also that u is bigger than 0. So what does it mean? So now I integrate from 0, which comes from here, to t. So in the context of Laplace transform, you define fg of t to be integral from 0 to t f t minus u gu du. Okay, so now it's time for another theorem. So theorem 3. And that's the beautiful property of the convolution. So if you have convolution of two functions and take the Laplace transform, then it's the product of Laplace transforms. Proof. or almost proof. So let me start this the right hand side. So we have f s g s. You plug it into the integral formula. So you get it's double integral from 0 to infinity, 0 to infinity, e to s minus u plus v, fu gv du dv. So now I decide instead of u, I want to write t minus v. So I want to, you know, this to be t, and I decide this will be a new variable instead of u. So u equals to t minus v, du equals to dt. So then I have an integral from 0 to infinity dv, and then I have an integral from 0 from now. So when u is 0, then t is v. So from v to infinity e minus st f t minus v gv dt. So now comes the trick. So I claim that obvious thing that I can actually exchange these integrals so that I really get the convolution. So trick is that integral from 0 to infinity and from v to infinity of anything dt dv equals to integral from 0 to infinity, integral from 0 to t of anything dv dt. So how to see that? If you just look at the picture, so you have t here, you have v here. So what I'm integrating on the left hand side is basically all the region where I always take like that, and then I take another slice, and in total I integrate over this triangle here. On the other hand, on the right hand side, I have t v, t equals to v, and I slice it like that, and so in the end I integrate over the same triangle. So this is true. So then I can continue here. Okay, that's not very clever. So I exchange these integrals. So I have integral from 0 to infinity dt e minus st, and now 0 to t f t minus v gv dv. And of course, this is just the convolution, and that is the Laplace transform. So it's f star g. So now this is really beautiful property, and it's used to solve convolution equations, so convolution integral equations. And so these are not that uncommon. So I'll just mention two examples. So convolution equations are quite common. So one example is so-called, I don't know how to pronounce, but Volterra equation. Equation, which was formulated by Vito Volterra, 1931. And so in one of the forms, it has, well, you have an equation so for x, and you know that this is given by any function, well, ft plus the convolution. U du. And so this equation, for example, described population growth. And it was, since then, it was used for nuclear reactor theory and so on. So just, I will not deal with this equation. But it is very, very useful equation. And of course, using that property, we can easily solve that. So now I take the Laplace transform. So I have equal to that, and this equals to A and X. So I can solve, well, I have too many equalities. So I can solve for X. So this equals to Laplace transform to minus 1, F 1 minus A. So of course, again, it reduces to the fact that I can find the inverse transform to the inverse transform to this thing here. So that was one example of convolution equation. So let me do another example, which is quite nice. And I didn't know it, actually. You probably knew it, but I didn't. So you probably know very well the problem of Brachistochrono. I tried to practice yesterday with Anna. So Brachistochrono. So usually the variational principle courses start with that. So you have point A and point B, and so we are interested in the shape of the wire if you put a bead on that so that it slides down and it takes the least time. So what is this curve? So you are well familiar with that. But I'll give you another Greek word, and it's taftochrona. So example 2, and it's the so it's taftochrona. Okay. And so this curve is basically, again, you have the wire and you have the bead which slides down without friction. And now you want such a curve so that the time, it doesn't matter where you start on the curve, but the time is the same. So if you start here, it takes 5 seconds. If you start here, it takes 5 seconds, and so on. So it's the curve such that the time required for a particle to slide down to the origin, to zero, is independent of the starting point. Okay. So who has seen that? Okay, not very many, that's good. So you have y, and then you have x. And this is the curve we are after. And it's some point x and y. And this is the starting point x0 and y0. And so you shall denote the length of the curve, L x and y, it will be this part here. So now actually the physics is very simple, so we have just the conservation of energy. So you have 1 half m dl over dt square equals to m g y 0 minus y. So now I put dt here and integrate the thing. So I have t of y 0 is, so gets 2g, but it's 1 over 2g. 1 over 2g integral dl over y 0 minus y. So now I just parameterize this L. So I'll say, well, it's a nice curve. So I can say, well, L depends only on the height, so only on y. So for each y, I will have different L. So let me do that. So I say now L equals to some function of y, which means dl is prime dy. So I plug it there. 2g. And so what I have here is now h prime at y divided y0 minus y, and this is of course integrated over y. So it's precisely the convolution. So it's convolution at the point y0, and it's convolution of h prime and 1 over square root of y. So this is 1 over 2g. H prime y 1 over y convolution 1 over y at the point y 0. Just look at the definition which we have somewhere there. So indeed, this problem leads to a convolution equation. So now, in general, this will depend on the starting point. But what I now require is that it's not, so this is a function of y0 in general. But now I require, it's not a function of y0. So I require this equals to t and so this is your equation which you have to solve. And let me just show you how would you do that. So of course you use this convolution theorem and the Laplace transform. Otherwise we wouldn't be doing that. So solution. So I Laplace transform that, so I have t, and then it goes to 1 over 2g, and then it's of prime. Of course, I could use the differentiation, but it's not necessary. And then I have 1 over y, and it's the product now. So somewhere we have the basic Laplace transforms. So Do we have them? I probably. Okay, doesn't matter. So I claim this is pi over s. You should derive that your tutorial. This I will just keep as it is. And if you have a constant, then this is t over s. So from here, I have that h prime Laplace transform is, so now it's square root of 2g, 2g, and pi square root of that. And then I have t. And then I have square root of s. But I can borrow square root of pi, and I can return it back. So this guy, again, using the same formula there, is 1 over y, the Laplace transform. So now, this is constant, that is constant. This is the only thing which is not constant. So I can look beneath the hats, and I have result h prime equals to square root of 2g t divided by pi 1 over square root of t y. Okay. So we basically already have the shape, but almost. So remember how we defined h. So h prime is dl over dy from that definition we made. So this is dl over dy. But l is, of course, x squared, dx squared. Well, dl is dx squared plus dy squared, square root of that. So this equals to, so now I divide by dy, and I get y 1 plus dx over dy square. And you know that this equals to some constant. So let me denote this to be a constant. K divided by square root of y. So from here, I can write that dx over dy square, I just square the whole thing, equals to k square minus y divided by y. So this is your equation to solve or integrate or whatever you want. And I just give you a nice parametric solution. So I claim that the solution x equals to k square over 2. So this equation you will encounter probably in cosmology as well. So k squared theta plus sine theta and y equals to k squared over 1 minus cosine theta of black hole physics. So this is the parametric solution. Theta is the parameter. And what does it describe? Anybody?
Cycloid.
Very good. So this is a cycloid. Cycloids. So the picture is if you have a rolling circle of the radius k over 2, hopefully, k over 2, and you start this point P, then you are interested in the curve the P makes. So if the circle rolls a little bit of the angle theta, then P will be here. And so P draws some curve, and that's precisely what you are having here. It's just to finish with the tochrona. Questions? So there's one more nice thing which you can extract from convolution. And that is, so I take two functions, one of which is 1. So now I have convolution of f times 1 s. So by definition of convolution, this is just the integral from 0 to t. But now 1 is just 1, so it's f tau d tau. And the Laplace of that. But by our theorem, it is just the product of two convolutions. So it's product of f times convolution of 1. But 1 is just a constant, so it's 1 over s. So this guy is 1 over s. So you just derive that this is 1 over s f of s. So this is a beautiful formula. So if you have an integral from 0 to t f tau d tau, and you do the Laplace transform, you get that it's just dividing by s. And of course, if you want to you can do it many times. So you can do f star 1 times star 1 and so on. So you would have now double integral. So this equals to from 0 to t d tau, from 0 to tau d lambda f lambda, this thing here. And now this is 1 over s, 1 over s, so it gives you 1 over s squared. So if you have integrals and then you do Laplace transform, it's just dividing by s. Very nice. So this can be used to calculate some inverse Laplace transforms. So for example, you want to find the inverse Laplace transform on k divided by s plus s squared plus k squared. And so you want, what is that? So just from our example at the beginning, you know that this guy here, k over s squared plus k squared, is just sine kt and the Laplace transform. So, oh yeah, kt s. So you have basically this thing here, which is sine kt of f divided by s. So we know that it is the Laplace transform of the integral. So Laplace transform kills minus Laplace transform, and we have just the integral. So it's the integral from 0 to t, and our f is just sine kt, sine k tau d tau. And this equals to 1 over k, 1 minus cosine kt. Now similarly, we do if you have f square or s square here or s cube, you just use many integrals here. Now we come to the most funny part of the Laplace transform, and that is the inversion integral formula. So how to find the inverse using something more involved than just guessing or using some dirty tricks? So the inversion integral. And for this, you will allow now S to be complex. Complex number. And remind or remark. So we basically considered Laplace transform for any function for which the integral makes sense. So now if we allow this to be complex, it's the same. So let's call A the set of admissible functions which are admissible so that the Laplace transform makes sense. And so there will be a set of functions which you can measure. I don't know what that exactly means, but probably not very big restriction. At on the interval 0 to infinity, for which? Yes?
Yeah, here in the Laplace transform, we assume always that S is positive. But what do you assume when you allow it to be?
I'll just say that. Yeah, I'll just say that. Yeah. So you, precisely, you would require that the real part of S is such nice that it kills the integral, so it must be positive. And yeah, exactly. So this is just little generalization of what we did before, but not really. So for which there exists an S complex such that, precisely what I just said, a very good question, that Ft e to minus real part of st. So dt is more than infinity. So if the Laplace transform exists for any s, then I'll just say, well, it makes sense to define Laplace transform for such function. Okay, so we can, for such admissible functions, we can define Laplace transform. So it's not very deep.
Sorry?
Yes?
Can you explain a little bit more about M?
M, I have no idea. anybody? Measurable functions? And the function is measurable. You can find it in Wikipedia. It's not a big restriction. So now, for all f which belong to A, there exists just one, Cf, which is a real constant, such that the definition region of f, of the Laplace transform of f, is the set of all s complex such that the real part of S is bigger than CF, or real part of S is bigger or equal to CF. So this is basically a lemma or something. I'll just explain what it means. But what is really non-trivial and what is very, very nice about this thing is that the Laplace transform is analytic. Analytic
is CF some number or is it C times F?
CF is a constant, real constant. Yes. Okay, because you can denote C, but usually it's denoted some special C. C, I don't know what F stands for, but so the Laplace transform is analytic for all s, such that the real part of s is bigger than cf. So picture, it's all very intuitive. So what I am basically saying is that if you have the complex plane, y and x, On the real axis, x is the constant CF. And I claim, so if the function is nice, if it's admissible, and for that function, that x is the CF, and I claim the Laplace transform is defined to the right of CF, and this line is either included or not. So here, the Laplace transform exists everywhere here, and this is either included or not. And the last thing is that the Laplace transform there on all of these variables is analytic. So exists, M is analytic in okay. So now what we would like to have is the prescription for the inversion. So what is the prescription? For inverse transform. And so far we knew that if L of f of t equals to f of s, then we said, well, ft equals to l minus 1 to f of s. Well, that's so we basically can try. So we can Laplace transform anything, and then we say, hey, but on the right hand side we've got something, and it must be if I take the inverse Laplace transform, it gives me that. So you can build a table of Laplace transform and its inverse in this way. But let's have some nice prescription for that. How to really get f? Like this table. Well, so of course, you required S to be complex so that we can use the complex methods. So remind, Cauchy's integral formula for analytic function Z for analytic FZ. So Z0 equals to 1 over 2 pi I. Then you circle around that. And Fz, Pz, Z minus Z0. So in particular, in our context, what we shall need, so we have Y, we have X, and let's assume that the function is analytic somewhere here. So then I choose and a contour like that, well, this will be gamma, this will be beta. Gamma plus I beta, gamma minus I beta. Of course, I will in the end send beta to infinity, so I'll just move this to infinity, that to infinity, that to infinity. Beta plus I beta, and beta minus I beta. So now, if the function is nice, and I'm lucky, then the integrals here over this, so you can integrate over C like that. This is Z0. So if I'm lucky and the function is such that the integral here, there, and there doesn't contribute, I'm just left with this integral, which is at finite value of gamma. So if F just falls off sufficiently rapidly, S Z goes to infinity for k bigger than 0, that is indeed the case. The integral there, there, and there does not contribute to that. So then I have f of z 0 equals to, now I'm integrating like that, so I'll have minus that integral. So it's minus 1 over 2 pi I integral from gamma minus, okay, limit limit beta goes to infinity from gamma minus e beta, gamma plus e beta, and z, z, dz, z minus z zero. Okay. Questions? So this is just a reminder. So now we apply this to the Laplace transform of function f. So where do I write it? First table is good. So let me put this up. Right, up. Okay. And this down. Okay, this could work, except so now let's apply this formula to the Laplace transform of f. So this equals to 1 over 2 pi I. I just switched the order of z0 and z. So now z0 is s from gamma minus I infinity, gamma plus I infinity. That means that limit beta goes to infinity. F of z, s minus z, pz. And of course, you know that this is true only if you have, if you are in this whole, in this analytic part of that. So you have, okay, I'll just write it. Real of S is bigger, gamma is bigger than this CF for that function. So then you know that in this region it is analytic. Okay, and so let's apply formally the inverse Laplace transform on that. So what I get here is Ft, and of course by Ft I mean the average if it's not continuous and so on. So this is 1 over 2 pi I integral. Okay, and now L minus 1, and now I'm inverting, so the only thing which depends on S is this 1 over S minus Z. So I'm inverting that. Okay, but this is trivial. It's just e to s, e to tz. Okay, so I just derived. So let me write instead of z, let me write s back. So we have ft equals to 1 over 2 pi I integral from gamma minus I infinity, gamma plus I infinity, e to st fs ds. And this is the complex inversion integral. Inversion integral. Okay, and so now you have some nice, so this is just a heuristic derivation, but you can have some nice theorems which really proving everything rigorously that this is indeed an inverse to F. And so the conditions are, for example, that you just require, so you can either impose conditions on F or on its Laplace transform. And so, for example, if you have F, which is piecewise differentiable, then the statement is really this converges to the average of FT plus plus FT minus divided by 2. Or you can impose some conditions on this guy. Basically, it must be analytic in some region. It must have some proper fall off so that the integral exists and then the other integrals do not contribute and so on. And then it goes to the inverse of that. So there are theorems, but not very important. So this is how you calculate using the complex methods and the inverse. Okay, so how to calculate that? Somehow. This is a nice formula about how to use it. And of course, you use the Cauchy-Gorsat theorem. So how do these integral from minus infinity to so use Cauchy-Gorsat? Which is that integral that if you have no poles, then you go circle around and then you get zero. Or if you have poles, then it's just a residual and so on. So in particular, let me just formulate one special case. So e.g. F is sectionally continuous on 0 to infinity. Fs has n isolated poles. Isolated poles. In so we know that this cannot happen for real part of S bigger than CF, but it can happen for small for that.
Question. What does it say?
If F is sectionally continuous, so it's continuous, piecewise continuous, on this. And you have n isolated points, isolated poles, and there exists R0 and exists A bigger than 0 such that Fs is smaller than n over S. Q, what is Q? Something. So this is just conditions that. Okay, then, of course, you calculate the integral like that. So you have x and y. Then you have CF here. You know that the function is analytic anywhere. So you take any gamma, which is to the right of CF. So let me choose this gamma, but it can be that gamma, whatever. This is the integral which you want. There may be some poles here. And then you close the contour like that. And hopefully these are the conditions so that the integration over this part does not contribute. So then you would have that the integral is just the sum of the residues. N residue. At these poles, at k of fs e to st. This is one example if you have isolated points, isolated poles only. Of course, if you have some branch cuts and so on, then you have to, for example, if you have a function which is not defined here and 0, so this is 0, then this is the integral which you want. Or you can go like that, go like that, circle around, go like that. So that's another. Yes?
I can't see what it says there. The modulus of f have s.
Sorry, my handwriting is getting worse and worse. So this one, you count?
No, less than m over
s to the power
s to power q. And I guess the q must be something bigger than zero at least, but maybe something else. Okay. So basically I'm saying the integral over this part has to vanish.
It's a.
You have a versus q.
Yes, okay, a, good. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Is the Laplace transform in this case just a rational function because it's analytic and only has finite?
Is it what? Which
it
function?
Rational. I mean, it cannot be more complicated.
The Laplace transform
should be rational.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you're going to have single poles that say sine of s.
But then it does not decay either.
Yeah.
I think there's a theorem in contact.
You can have something like, I mean, a step function cutting off the poles to the right.
So I would like to start. I know that we are finished by time, but can you give me 10 more minutes? And I would like to start the Fourier transform. And so let me just use the definition. So you define the Fourier transform. And now I will use, instead of s, I will use k. And it will be a vector. So now this was one dimensional. Now we have more dimensional thing. So this will be integral over r to d of f of x. So this is a Fourier transform of function f, e minus k times x, where this is a dot product. It's a scale product of k and the vector x, dx. Or you can write it like that, but I will use the hat. And then you can define an inverse Fourier transform. And this funny factor, 2 pi over d, and again, integral over rd, fk, e plus, I'm missing I x dot k, dk. And this is sometimes f minus 1 of f. Point x.
You should have x on the left hand side.
I should have x on the left hand side. That's right. Thank you. anything other wrong? So now these are just two. So this is an integral formula for one transform and then the other transform. I don't claim at this point that they are inverse. But it will turn out that for reasonable functions, they are. So just an example. So. Example, the only function which we will calculate for, so Fourier transform of e to x squared over 2 Okay. So now you plug it into the integral, and it leads to the Gaussian integral almost. So Dennis will be happy if you can prove that it equals to 2 pi d over 2 e minus k square over 2. So you see that the exponential almost survives the Fourier transform. So you almost get, again, an exponential. And so now if you calculate using, so it was the first prescription. Now you calculate the second prescription. So you calculate f minus 1 to e minus k square over 2 in x. And you find out it equals to minus x square over 2. So it seems that, so I start with this, and I end up with that. So it seems like for this function, it is an inverse. So it looks, so f and
well,
f.
Did you get some 2 pi?
So I have 2 pi here, and maybe there's some 2 pi missing. So, but I have 2 pi there.
You
so
could redefine your f's to have 1 over 2 pi d halves in both cases. And then
yes. This is a physics definition, which I want you to know. The mathematics definition is that you split your 2 pi, so you have 1 over square root of 2 pi to d in both formulas, and then it's more symmetric. But anyway, so maybe there's some 2 pi here. So and f minus 1 look like inversion. And indeed, they are inversion for certain functions. OK, I don't want to comment on the existence. I just want to mention one thing. So note that the Laplace transform as we had it so far is just a trivial example of this. So if you take, so Laplace transform is special case of Fourier transform. And so if you take f to be f for x bigger than 0 and 0 for x smaller than 0, then L of f of s is minus infinity to infinity f of x e to minus real part of s times x minus e times imaginary part of s times x. And this is the Fourier transform of function f of x e to minus 3 part s x at the point imaginary of s, hopefully. This is middle. So indeed, what we have so far is just a trivial subcase of that. Three more minutes? Sorry.
Question.
How did I
get this last
result? So I want the Fourier transform, which has the I there. So this thing will be basically k. So it is over that thing. So if I take k to be imaginary part of s, and take this guy to be just a new function, that's precisely what I'm getting there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's better to say that Fourier transform is a special case of Laplace transform where real of S is equal to zero?
Well, in one dimension you can say that, but remember that this is a higher dimensional thing. So Laplace transform is, in some sense, Laplace transform is more powerful because you don't have many requirements on the function f. And the reason for that is, well, in one dimension you can use this complex thing and so on. So Fourier transform is much more restricted. The definition region is much tighter. You're right, yeah. So just to have some physics in the end, so Fourier transform in quantum mechanics. And I'll just be saying very trivial things, but it's nice to have them. So in quantum mechanics, you have state psi. And then specifically, I can choose eigenstate state of the operators. Of the operators of the position or the operator of the momentum. So this is defined by, I have the operator x acting on its eigenstate, and it gives me the eigenvalue x, and I have p acting on p, gives you the p and p. So now we know that these states form a complete basis. The complete orthonormal in the sense of distributions basis. So I can write that unity equals to sum over x or x. Or if you want, you know that this is not discrete, then you can write it as an integral of x. X dx. The same thing is valid for p. So I can write it as sum over pp. Now, with our definitions, physics definitions, it's again the integral, but the measure is slightly different. It's 1 over 2 pi d of integral pp dp. And you know that it's orthonormal in the sense of distribution. So it's at x and x prime. This is delta x minus x prime, and the same for p. So you know that. So now let me ask, how does the state psi looks in the x representation? So this is all very basic, but I just want to really. So psi in x representation. Representation. So you usually write it as a wave function. A function psi of x, which you define to be the product of the state x and psi. So now, how does the operator x act on that? So you go with this vector through x. So this is just the operator x in x representation, x and psi. But you know what, it's just multiplication by x. So this is x psi of x. So this is an operator in x representation. So now, remember that I derive quantum mechanics just saying, well, I have the commutation relations of x and p, and this is now non-trivial thing. So I want x and p to be some funny constant times I, or 1.
What is x power x and p?
This is just to remind you that this is d the operator x in x representation. Yeah, sorry, if you haven't seen this notation, sorry for that. So yeah, but you know that it's just multiplication by x. So now you want to satisfy that. I want this. And you know that you can satisfy it by, so now I ask what is x on p on psi. So now this will be the operator p in x representation and psi x. And you can guess, or it's given by somebody clever or whatever, that the operator p x on the wine function is I over d x of psi x. So now you can check that it indeed satisfies these commutation relations. So this is just educated guess in order to satisfy that. Okay, two more lines. So that's great. So now I can ask how this state looks like, x, p, on p. So now I take psi equal to p. So you can act with p on p, which gives you just multiplication by p. It gives you p, x on p. On the other hand, I can go through like that. So this is equal to operator in x representation, x and p, which you know is minus d minus I d over dx, x and p. So you have a differential equation for product of x and p. So this and that. So from here, you conclude that x and p equals to e to I p times x. You can as well as start from here, you postulate that, well, I have the plane waves, and then you can derive that or whatever. Yeah, but this is, I think this is maybe better. Okay, so now the final thing is to consider p representation. So x representation was defined acting on psi with this, the eigenvectors of x. So now I will be acting on psi's eigenvectors of psi. So the wave function, which is now a function of p, is defined by p and psi. So now you can plug in the unity. So it's sum over x, p, x, x on psi. We know what is this. So this is just complex conjugate of that. So this equals to psi of x e to minus I p times x. So you see that the state in p representation and the state in x representation, they are connected by Fourier transformation. That's it.